Good evening. In the news tonight, the United Nations votes for more sanctions against North Korea, which Donald Trump then discounts.
Those sanctions are nothing compared to what ultimately will have to happen.
Dreamers, along with Democrats, continue to push for the DREAM Act.
Immigrant dreamers have come here to make America the great country that it is, that it was, that it is, and it always will be.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders' Medicare for All bill garners a number of co-sponsors. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Tuesday, September 12, 2017. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders is expected to introduce Medicare for All into the Senate tomorrow. His bill would, in effect, expand Medicare to cover all Americans, not just the elderly. Co-sponsors now include Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, New Jersey's Cory Booker, Jeff Merkley from Oregon, New York's Kirsten Gillibrand, and Rhode Island's Sheldon Whitehouse. California Senator Kamala Harris is also on board. As of this afternoon, Sanders' bill garnered 11 total public co-sponsors. Richard Blumenthal, another co-sponsor this afternoon, tweeted, "Proud to announce my support for single-payer Medicare for All, led by Senator Sanders. Let's make health care a right, not a luxury." The bill will be introduced Wednesday afternoon. In other news, Edith Windsor, plaintiff in the Supreme Court case which struck down the Defense of Marriage Act in 2013, has died. She was 88 years old. The gay rights activist was lead plaintiff in the case which gave same-sex married couples federal recognition for the first time and rights to myriad federal benefits, which until then were received only by married heterosexuals. Edith Windsor died in Manhattan. In other news, turning to Baltimore and some unsettling but maybe not surprising news, in the death of Freddie Gray, the U.S. Department of Justice, headed by former Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions, won't bring federal charges against the six police officers involved in the arrest and death of Freddie Gray. He was the 25-year-old black man whose death touched off weeks of protest and unrest in Baltimore. Gray's neck was broken in the back of a police transport wagon in April of 2015. The young man had been handcuffed and shackled at the time, but he was unrestrained by a seat belt and was taken for a wild ride. Police officers were charged by state prosecutor, but then three officers were acquitted at trial. Baltimore State's Attorney General Marilyn Mosby dropped the remaining state cases. The Gray family's attorney says the Justice Department informed him today that no charges would be filed. Five officers face internal disciplinary trials. These are expected to begin on October 30th. Turning to international news and North Korea. Last night, the United Nations Security Council passed new sanctions against North Korea to curtail its weapons program. The sanctions come after North Korea says it conducted its sixth nuclear test, a hydrogen bomb test, on September 3rd. The UN sanctions limits oil exports. It bans textile imports and access to gas liquids, including about 55% of petroleum products. Ranking member on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, New York Representative Elliot Engel, says mixed messages from Donald Trump to North Korea are not helpful.
The president's behavior surrounding this crisis is making the situation even more challenging. Outrageous red lines like threats of fire and fury, shaming our allies through tweets, inconsistently from one day to the next about Kim Jong-un or China or our economic partnership with South Korea, picking a fight with South Korea right at this time, loose talk about expanding America's nuclear arsenal and the proliferation of these devastating weapons. All these actions undermine the credibility of the Office of the President and the credibility of the U.S. government, effectively undermining U.S. leadership and driving a wedge between Washington and our friends, creating grave uncertainty with China, whose cooperation we need, and with North Korea, whose leader is, as we know, single-minded and ruthless. Our country faces a serious national security challenge, and we need principled and visionary leadership. We need to be standing with our allies, acting with integrity, and reaffirming our commitments. The President needs to lead on the global stage, pushing China and Russia to enforce sanctions effectively, and building consensus about a path forward, not waiting to see who does what next and then reacting with the first words that come to mind.
The Trump administration is warning that the U.S. will punish companies in China and Russia who don't comply with restrictions in the new international sanctions on North Korea. Today, State Department and Treasury Department officials testified to the House Foreign Affairs Committee. They spoke about the pressure campaign against North Korea's weapons development. Marshall Billingsley is Assistant Secretary for Terrorist Financing with the Treasury Department. At the hearing, he says North Korea has been living under sanctions for the past 10 years and is quite adept at getting around sanctions intended to constrain weapons programs.
The fact, however, is that North Korea has been living under UN sanctions for over a decade, and it has nevertheless made significant strides towards its goal of building a nuclear-tipped ICBM. As is the case with any international agreement, the effectiveness of UN Security Council resolutions depends upon implementation and enforcement.
Billingsley says Kim Jong-un has two financial vulnerabilities, revenue generation and access to the world financial system. He points to how North Korea has been raising funds through coal shipments, and he says new sanctions are aimed at strangling that revenue source. Here's Billingsley at the House hearing today with slides describing how North Korea has been getting its coal to market.
As part of their efforts to acquire revenue, the regime employs deceptive shipping practices to conceal the true origin of goods. Pyongyang falsifies the identity of vessels to make it harder for governments to determine if ships docking in their ports are linked to North Korea. And despite this evasion, we will expose the individuals and companies that are providing insurance, maintenance, or other services to North Korean vessels. For instance, in June, we designated Dalian Global Unity, a Chinese company that apparently was transferring about 700,000 tons of freight annually between China and North Korea. I'm pleased to provide with the committee today additional exposures of these duplicitous actions. The intelligence community has provided to your committee today evidence of how vessels originate in China, they turn off their transponders as they move into North Korean waters, they dock at North Korean ports, and they onload commodities such as coal. They keep those transponders off, and then they turn them back on as they round the South Korean peninsula and they head into a Russian port. In this particular case, this vessel, MV Baimei 8, registered in St. Kitts and Nevis, sat in that Russian port for a period of time and then headed back out to water, ultimately docking back in China with North Korean origin coal. Sanctions evasion. The second slide, which we'll show now, is yet another example. In this particular example, you have a vessel that pulled into North Korea, kept its transponder off in violation of international maritime law, docked in Russia, offloaded the North Korean coal. Another vessel, that one was Panamanian, another vessel from Jamaica, Jamaican flag, pulled in, picked up the North Korean coal, and headed straight to China, again, to circumvent UN sanctions.
These are examples of why the new UN sanctions now call for closer inspection of cargo ships going in and out of its ports. The Security Council also gives countries the right to inspect ships with the consent of the countries where the ships are registered. Welcoming the resolution, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres underscored the importance of maintaining unity in the Security Council while tackling security challenges on the Korean Peninsula and beyond. He says this firm action by the Security Council sends a clear message that the DPRK must comply fully with its international obligations. The Secretary General urged the DPRK leadership to abide by the decisions of the Council and allow space for the resumption of dialogue. Meanwhile, as an example of one arm not knowing what another is doing, in contrast to testimony by the Treasury Department earlier today, valuing the further UN sanctions, here's what Donald Trump said in a meeting with the Malaysian Prime Minister after he praised that country for no longer having business dealings with North Korea.
And we find that to be very important. We had a vote yesterday on sanctions. We think it's just another very small step, not a big deal. Rex and I were just discussing, not big, I don't know if it has any impact, but certainly it was nice to get a 15-0 vote, but those sanctions are nothing compared to what ultimately will have to happen.
And you're listening to the news on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio. This is WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM. That's where you're tuned. Or maybe you're listening on WBAI.org. Turning to Dreamers, Nassau County Representative, longtime Representative Peter King, is co-sponsoring anti-immigrant legislation. According to Make the Road New York, it would allow the Department of Homeland Security to further criminalize immigrant communities and violate due process rights of all. Javier Valdez is co-executive director of Make the Road New York.
After Donald Trump declared an all-out war on immigrant youth last week by moving to end DACA, the only piece of immigration legislation that Congress should be debating should be the DREAM Act, which will provide a solution for the nearly 1 million young people he has put in limbo. Instead, Peter King and other House Republicans are advancing legislation that would permit ICE to further its rogue practices of targeting people indiscriminately for supposedly gang affiliation. ICE practices of violating community members' rights are already the subject of much litigation. On Long Island in particular, we've seen immigrant youth wrongly accused of gang affiliation and detained because they wore the wrong colored t-shirt to the mall. ICE needs to be reined in, not given more leeway to terrorize our communities. Members of Congress should all reject this irresponsible legislation and turn immediately to passing the DREAM Act this year.
Make the Road New York represents more than 21,000 immigrant members in New York. Meanwhile, in Washington, D.C. today, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, along with other Democratic leaders, discussed the DREAM Act.
So a week and a half ago, I was in Chicago, and I saw this art exhibit that I was invited to see. It's called And Then They Came For Me. And it's about the internment of the Japanese-American patriots in our country who were interned into camps during World War II, while their family members were fighting for freedom for America and for the world in World War II, they were in camps, and they came for me. And now they're coming for the Dreamers. This is something that we owe these Dreamers for their patriotism, their courage, their optimism to come forward. But it's about America, too. But the fight is for who we are as a country. They are the manifestation of that fight right now. But we cannot let them come for them. And so while the president thinks that giving 6 months' time for Congress to act, we want to do that sooner. We want to do it within 6 weeks. And hopefully we can by supporting the DREAM Act that is in the House and in the Senate, both houses. But we must pass something before we leave for Christmas, that's for sure. But in doing so, we will not only be protecting the Dreamers, we will be protecting the integrity of our country. So thank you, for Dreamers, for being stronger than anybody, for being stronger than anybody, and for actually taking some risks for your families to keep America the country we take pride in being. Thank you for your patriotism.
Pelosi stood with members of the Congressional Asian Pacific American Caucus. It represents thousands of Asian American dreamers, like New York's Ivy Tang Lei. She's a Chinese American DACA recipient and works as an immigrant advocate.
My family and I came to the United States in 1998 on a visitor's visa, and with no way of renewing our paperwork, we decided to stay after falling in love with this country and the promise for a better future. I was 7 years old when I arrived. Of the 11 million undocumented immigrants in the United States, around 1.6 million identify as Asian American Pacific Islander. Like so many of others in my situation, I follow the American Dream rules like it's my Bible. Living in the shadows was a very accurate way of describing my way of life. We never caused trouble. Never asked for what we were given, more than what we were given. We were perpetually afraid to attract anyone's attention. And since we couldn't afford babysitters, my siblings and I spent most of our time in my mother's garment factory, where she worked as a sewer. Without any access to financial aid, I worked multiple part-time jobs to pay through college. And since graduation, I've gone from working at the Gap to working at a large marketing firm, and now I'm employed at a tech startup.
The Young New Yorker says America was founded on the very principles the Trump administration is waging a war against.
Now America risks forgetting that it is immigrants who make our country great. And revoking DACA was a betrayal on every American value. This is the only country I know. I pledge allegiance to the American flag. I sing the Star-Spangled Banner, and I'm proud to be an American. But my American identity has been challenged every single day. Dreamers like me have become a political football thrown around with no end in sight. With 800,000 of us and DACA rescinded, we will lose our jobs, the economy will suffer, and the information we have given the government will paint a target on our backs. Deportation officials may come after us, take us away from our home, despite the fact the majority of Americans favor giving a path to some sort of legal status. The DREAM Act was first introduced in 2001, 16 years ago, and today our country and the Congress has 6 months to decide which side of the history we want to be on. We demand Congress from both sides of the aisle to come together for a clean DREAM Act now.
Standing with Ivy Tang Lei is New York Congress member from Queens, Joe Crowley.
What the president did last week was immoral and at best was cynical. To use young people who are striving to make the most as cultural Americans and give back to this great country that has given so much opportunity to them. I want to say to all of them, that we will not stop. Our caucus will not stop. We will find whatever vehicle we need to get this bill passed, to ensure that the Dreamers will be able to continue to enrich their lives here and contribute to their country, America. They are cultural Americans. As I've pointed out, over 800,000 of them, almost one in every 300 Americans, they are Americans, cultural Americans, can call themselves Dreamers. But the truth is, we're all dreamers. Every American is a dreamer. That's what our country has been based on. Immigrant dreamers have come here to make America the great country that it is, that it was, that it is, and it always will be. These are American children, American young people, in their hearts and in their minds. And we cannot rest until we see that a DREAM Act is passed. And I just want to ask Ivy, if she just come back up for just a moment. Although she's from Manhattan, her parents live in Grace Meng's district in Queens, but we also have something else in common. We both hold degrees in communications from CUNY, don't we?
Yeah!
You probably wouldn't have been able to tell that. But she's not a political football. She's a real person, Mr. President. Skin and bones with dreams. Don't deny her dreams. Your mother wasn't denied hers. Don't deny her. Our dreams.
And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. Turning back to the 16th anniversary of September 11th commemorated yesterday, here's a commentary from Benjamin Dixon with the Progressive Army wondering if America has learned anything.
So despite the clear role that Saudi Arabia's government played in the 9/11 attacks, we've done nothing but protect Saudi Arabia. The Bush administration protected Saudi Arabia by not allowing the full 9/11 Commission report to be released. President Obama protected the Saudis by vetoing a bill that would allow the kingdom to be sued by victims of 9/11. That veto was subsequently overridden by Congress. And President Trump, despite his oafish but accurate language towards Saudi Arabia during the election, has gotten completely in bed now with the kingdom. There was no military invasion of Saudi Arabia, no drone attacks, no sanctions, nothing despite their clear involvement. Yet we utterly devastated Iraq, a nation that had nothing to do with 9/11 nor had weapons of mass destruction. So today we honor the victims of 9/11. One thing we do well in America is to mourn our fallen with symbols of pride and patriotism. But we've yet to come to terms with our foreign policy decisions, which helped create Osama bin Laden, using him to fight against the spread of communism. We have yet to come to terms with our foreign policy decisions, which support the spread of Wahhabism, the virulent strand of Islam that is the theological underpinnings of Islamic fundamentalists. We've not confronted our perverse relationship with a nation that was at a minimum complicit with the greatest attack on American soil since Pearl Harbor. We have not even begun a conversation about how America has used and still uses an extremist ideology as a tool to fight back against communism, the economic rival to capitalism. America will protect capitalism, even if it means promoting Wahhabism, even if it means creating the creation of the very organizations that we're still fighting 16 years later. In America, we know how to mourn our dead, but we haven't learned yet how to honor them by changing the decisions that ultimately led to 9/11 and that continue to create terrorism abroad.
Benjamin Dixon, author and founder of ProgressiveArmy.com. And WBAI's Steve Brown has another aspect of the anniversary which should be looked at. He sent out an email blast to Pacifica Radio supporters on another 9/11 tragedy, one that took place 28 years earlier in 1973, and not in America, but in Chile, which caused the death of tens of thousands while torturing and exiling 200,000 more. The coup d'etat that overthrew the democratically elected government of Salvador Allende replaced it with nearly two decades of a murderous dictatorship that was under Generalissimo Augusto Pinochet. That coup was strategized, funded, and abetted by President Richard Nixon at the time, by Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, and by CIA directors from Richard Helms and James Schlesinger to William Colby and George Herbert Walker Bush. Brown writes that although Nixon, Kissinger, Helms, Schlesinger, Colby, and Bush are arguably as guilty of mass murder for their part in the Chilean coup of 9/11-1973 as the 19 militants who reportedly flew airliners into the World Trade Towers on 9/11-2001, the former didn't suffer the same fate as the latter. The 19 al-Qaeda, or one could say the Saudi militants involved in the 9/11-2001 attacks, all reportedly perished when their aircraft crashed. By contrast, Pinochet died peacefully in his sleep at age 94, surrounded by family in a Santiago hospital. The death of Richard Nixon at 81 was celebrated by an impressive public memorial service. It was paid for by American taxpayers and attended by world dignitaries, including all five living American presidents. As for the CIA chiefs, Richard Helms lived to a ripe old age of 89, John Schlesinger to 85, and William Colby to a less ripe but still respectable 76 years of age. And George Herbert Walker Bush is still with us at age 95, along with 94-year-old Henry Kissinger. 44 years later, the U.S. has still not made a public apology to the Chilean people for decades of misery, torture, and death that it caused. Brown goes on to say this isn't surprising, since it hasn't apologized to the Iranian people either for decades of misery, torture, and death it caused when the CIA overthrew their democratically elected government of Mossadegh in 1953. Or it hasn't apologized to the Guatemalan people for overthrowing their democratically elected government in 1954. And Brown says he can go on. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Tuesday, September 12th, 2017. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
Michelle Peña Herrera, Nalvia Rosa Menia Alvarado, Cecilia Castro Salvadores, Ida Amelia Armada. Hay una mujer desaparecida. Hay una mujer desaparecida en Chile, en Chile. And the junta knows where she is. And the junta knows where they are hiding her. She's dying. Hay una mujer desaparecida. hay una mujer desaparecida en Chile y en Chile. Clara Elena Cantero, Elisa del Carmen Escobar, Eliana María Espinosa, Rosa Elena Morales. Hay una mujer desaparecida, hay una mujer desaparecida en Chile y en Chile. And the junta knows, and the junta knows where she is, and the junta knows where they are hiding her. She's dying. Hay una mujer desaparecida. Hay una mujer desaparecida. En Chile, en Chile. Brazil, missing in Uruguay, missing Guatemala, missing El Salvador. Hay un hombre, hay un niño, los niños. Desaparece.